Tiffin is about the Ukraine crisis. So I was looking at it, and I found a quote from Chomsky from 1986. He was talking about the Cold War, and there's this idea that the Cold War is being recreated. And Chomsky was saying more or less what he was saying. It's the crisis of capitalism. When capitalism is in crisis, they look to do things like increase defense budgets. So a lot of the driving force in the Ukraine is Western arms industry wanting to cream off public money so that they can build things like Tridents. But it's not just the Western side. The same thing's happening in Russia. There's a Russian defense industry that's, you know, half owned by shareholders, and I think their exports are 13 billion, blah, blah, blah. So there is a mechanism to create that crisis in Ukraine. That's just basically what I wanted to say.
They've just doubled the Russian arms budget this year, to back up what you just said.
Yeah. And they're cutting education and healthcare.
Rather than a sec, but it was a question. Really sorry. So, one thing that I think is interesting, she picks up on the question of imperialism and anti-imperialism, and the matter of, I often find that in anti-imperialist struggles, the question of class can become quite muddled, and something that I sometimes kind of struggle with, certainly on the left. I'm in Workers' Liberty, which is a Trotskyist group, but I suppose we have a lot of arguments with other groups on the left about imperialism. And, I was thinking about national liberation of oppressed nations, such as Palestine or various other places in the world where we might campaign for their national self-determination, but we wouldn't be pro-nationalism, and that's because they're oppressed on the basis of a national identity. And I think I'm not going to end up with a really clear question at the end of this, by the way. The matter of class there, I think, is something that's very much lost, and I think is still really important. So in order to have what I would say is an appropriate campaign and an appropriate struggle for self-determination of an oppressed group, class always has to be part of that struggle. So I went to Palestine and met various groups, and it's very, very clear, you know, just because a country is oppressed on the basis of its national identity, or a group is oppressed on the basis of national identity, doesn't mean class oppression doesn't exist. And it does exist. There are Palestinian capitalists exploiting Palestinian workers, and that's really, really clear. There are Palestinian trade unions that I've met and I have links with and things, but I've been very frustrated with that example, and there are many other examples where it certainly in the kind of Trotskyist stuff that you mentioned, that's ignored, and it's ignored, and I think it's quite a patronising approach, actually. So there's one Palestinian identity, they're on Palestinian exploitative capitalists, but it's a good thing that you picked up on, but I find that certainly as an organisation we get like attacked quite a lot for saying this, and saying if you're not with the Palestinian people as a whole, then you're not, you know, you're not kind of, you don't understand the imperialist struggle. And that relationship between imperialism and class, I think, is something that is really difficult to draw out. I am going to just probably run off before you answer that. It's probably terrible.
Yes. Before you run,
sorry,
I want a very quick stab at it. Because I had a misspent youth as well. I used to be a Matt Gamner, right, a long, long time ago. So, okay, you're in the politics, and let's focus on Palestine, Israel as a good example. Because, Workers' Liberty is quite unusual amongst the Trotskyists. They support the two-state solution, and you still do, as far as I know. And at one time, the two-state solution looked like something that the ruling classes of the world could probably live with. It seems to have faded away a bit. Now, you say problem is that when you're supporting the rights of an Israeli state to exist and a Palestinian state to exist, that you end up getting a bit muddled about the class questions, and that the class questions tend to get buried under this advocacy for two states.
That's not really what I meant.
Okay. Well, there's a good reason why you would get confused, because you've got two conflicting things going on. If you're trying to hold on to a class analysis, then what you need to be looking at is not a one-state solution or a two-state solution, but actually a no-state solution. What we're arguing for is class struggle, which actually destroys all bourgeois or all ruling class formations, and that includes their states. So that's the difference between what we're saying and what you're saying.
To be fair, I think most people, certainly myself and most people in the world, say a two-state solution is not the end. We want a no-state solution for the world as well. We don't want nations the idea is that class solidarity across nations is a transitional
concept.
That's not really what I was talking about. And as I said, I was talking more about the issue on the left of discussion on anti-imperialist struggle, kind of like removing discussion around class differences. I feel like it feels like it's impossible to talk about class struggle in situations of imperialist oppression. I find that a very frustrating thing for myself talking to. I probably mean like other trustees groups, but like. I think it's unfortunate because I think class struggle is something that is basically for me more important than views.
No, but I mean, I think you're right. The class struggle should be more important. The reason why you're feeling it challenging is because lots of Trotskyists, and there's some disagree about the definition of. Including critical Trotskyists, like Workers' Liberty, they have this view of the world, which is that you can have anti-imperialist struggles, which aren't based on working class struggles. Now, the fact is that the world is an imperialist world. There's a whole network of imperialist relationships which encompass the whole globe. What we're saying, and this is what, if you like, cuts through where things get knotty for you, is that the response to the world system is an international working class struggle, which may start on one territory, may start on another, will be sharper here or sharper there. But what we have to avoid, and this is where you're getting tangled up, what we avoid is allowing that working class struggle to be subjected, to be overcome by any sort of national struggle. There's no progressive national liberationism available these days. Even if in 1920 people might have thought that there was, because there was actually a big revolution upstairs going on then. Since then, we've had 90 years of dozens and dozens and dozens of new nation states and new national liberation movements taking over states. And none of them has brought anyone either in that state or beyond an inch nearer to socialist revolution.
I totally agree with you, but I'm getting so many phone calls saying we're outside the car, so I'm really sorry. Thank you.
It was for the benefit of the system. Well, the point I will make is I think it's not a clear cut issue because I think we're here to deal with all forms of oppression. And ultimately, oppression can only be defeated by engaging the class struggle to completely within a transformed society. But if by saying we should have nothing to do with all forms of nationalism means that we do not involve ourselves in the battle for the rights of the Palestinians, I think that's a mistake. I think there's a difference, for example, between Turkish nationalism of the oppressive state, which is the times of history tantamount to fascism, and Kurdish nationalism of people who were wanting their own autonomy, albeit on national lines, which draws into the question of Rojava, because there in Rojava we've got a struggle which has come out of a nationalist movement. But certainly the situation on the ground in Rojava appears to be one whereby it's internationalist in effect, because there in Rojava you've got a haven where people are Arab, Assyrian, Kurdish can work together, can be protected no matter what the religion is. And I think the question of the past 12 months where you've had the pinpoint of the experiment in Rojava that's not socialist necessarily, but certainly very democratic, has been threatened with ISIS, which is utter fascistic barbarism and genocidal. I think it's quite clear that despite the discrepancies what there could be with what's happening in Rojava, we support the Rojavan revolution. Because whilst on the one hand it could be construed to be nationalist, on the other hand it's also internationalist. So I think a lot of these questions are not straightforward. It's like in the question of Scotland, SNP tart tarnish to my mind, certainly leadership of it, but a lot of the rank and file are seeing their struggle for better wages and better living conditions and against austerity as being one that currently is best expressed through voting SNP and getting independence. Now, to my mind, I don't think we should necessarily be dismissing that struggle. We should be putting a rate on the sense of, yes, even if you get independence, you're still going to have oppression. But from the point of view, going through people's struggles, in a sense, with them and being understanding, so we can open up lines of communication with people, I think is important. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, what we need to do is take what certainly in Britain, a very marginalised movement that is the left, our challenge is to turn it once again into a huge part of the working class, which it used to be. So it brings upon the point of how do we relate to nationalisms? How do we relate to people? Not how we want them to be, but how they are now. If that makes sense.
Let Phil respond and I'll do.
Okay.
Me?
Yeah.
So soon. Thank you.
I was going to actually say something myself, but I'll let you do it instead.
No, I just want to be quick. One of the things I would love to see in response to what the two people have just said here about potential benefits of nationalism and nationalism resistance struggles, because that's what they talk about, anti-imperialism and so forth. That really, they want to say all forms, you've got to fight all forms of oppression, blah, 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 and that sort of nonsense. I'd love to see a bit of a history of leftist support for national liberation struggles over this last century. Just a list of all the dictators and the fascists and the brutal regimes that have been created, which the leftists have started off supporting, from Idi Amin downwards. I don't really care. You know, there's so many of them. And that's the product of this same argument that the gentleman has made here, that you have to support them because they're fighting oppression. They're fighting this big nationalist oppressor over in America or Russia. But if you follow that argument, you have to keep going down the scale. You know, and okay, so America's the big bad dog, but then Russia's slightly better, so you support Russia. Oh, but then Britain's slightly better than Russia, so you've got to support Britain. And then Spain's slightly better than Britain, so you've got to support Spain against Britain. And you just keep going down the scale, and you end up supporting absolute bastards like Idi Amin and Mugabe and Pol Pot and all these shitheads who, yes, are fighting a bit of oppression, but they're nationalists. They are bourgeois nationalists, and that's what they started off life as, and that's what they continue to be, and that's what they made real use of once they got into power on the back of all this ridiculous leftist support.
Yeah, just I just want to comment a little on some of the things that Kurdish thing is. I mean, the Kurdish, the what's going on in the part of Bashkir now, so I'll just use Eastern Kurds, say Eastern Kurdistan instead. But essentially, it's essentially controlled completely by the PKK, by force of arms. Now, let's look at a bit of the history of the PKK and their Syrian sister organisation. They threatened to kick all Arabs out of the area, to ethnically cleanse the area of all Arabs. They've constantly attacked school teachers and other people in Turkey, including kidnappings and murders of school teachers. There's a whole massive cult of a personality of a leader who's been in prison for the past 15, 20 years, I believe. The reality is, of the war, what's going off there, it's a completely anti-imperialist war. With America backed on one side, the PKK and their allies constantly asking for support from America, which they've been given on quite a number of occasions, to fight. Essentially, it's just another imperialist war with backed by different leaders, I mean, various different places.
When the Red Army liberated Auschwitz and the death camps, do you think those Jews should say, oh, it's just another imperialist power? You know, the difference was they stayed alive. And I think it's the same thing in Kurdistan. You can have a sort of an international viewpoint, but if you are dead or you'll be tortured and raped and then killed, you take the main chance. I don't support Stalinism, but if I was a Jewish person when they liberated Auschwitz, I wouldn't condemn them as co-imperialists. I'd just be relieved that I've been liberated.
But if you're a Jewish person in Russia and they were sending you to Siberia,
that's
in the hundreds of thousands as well. Yeah, they were shipping you off to Israel.
You have to be pragmatic to an extent, don't you?
If there's a concentration camp in Rojava, it's run by the PKK. Right, can we just get this right? The oppressor, the state, is the PKK. When David Graeber went to Rojava, he was given a guided tour by the official delegation guiding tour of a very sophisticated state organisation. The fact that Kurdistan is the only largest linguistic group without a state is irrelevant. It's a fact that because of their own tribal differences, they haven't been able to establish it. The PKK runs the prisons. The PKK has the monopoly of weapons. By any definition, that is, they are the oppressors, right? This identification with the enemy at the gates, IS, well, the enemy is gone. And it was defeated by an inter-imperialist alliance, right? How was it defeated? Well, first the Turks wouldn't help, would they? Right? The Rojava was on its own. And the Turks just sat watching, they getting pounded and pounded. And then suddenly, what happened? More Kurds were allowed in to Rojava. Who were these Kurds? The KDP of Mahmoud Barzani, another shit from of a national liberation leader of a different faction who is anti-PKK, but an ally of Erdogan. So they were let in to Rojava because they are there to partly police the PKK in as far as they can. Their intervention was decisive, plus the bombing, the Allied bombing raids, and Rojava was saved. Rojava exists because of the way in which the inter-imperialist networks work. It doesn't exist because there's this wonderful liberation struggle going on. And it's a complete fantasy of David Graeber to suggest that these committees and all the rest of it have any power whatsoever. If you watch on the web, you download the press statements of the PKK's agents in Rojava, and then you then match them with all the statements of all the people who support Rojava. They are almost verbatim. I did it, right? And it's almost the same story every time. But nobody is allowed a free witness in that area. And this is something you've got to remember. The Auschwitz analogy doesn't work. I mean, you're talking about the end of an imperialist war when something's happened. It's not the same analogy here, as we are in the middle of an imperialist maelstrom. And again, the Scottish question, we haven't said we're against the people. People can vote what they like, but what we're saying is, let's not pretend. And what we're talking to our Scottish friends here, who are a lot of them have sickeningly begun to support nationalist propaganda, because they are actually selling the illusion that life will be better, right? And it will not be better. It's a total diversion. And that's the other thing, is we have to get people to focus on what is the real question in their lives, which is the capitalist system is in deep crisis. That's why I went into it all in here. The capitalist system is in deep crisis, and it is the cause of all the misery that is inflicted upon everybody. And that's our starting point.
Yeah, I do find the issue of nationalism, it is such a powerful, I could have written a good joke about how powerfully it is being used in Britain, across the world, really. in recent decades. It's stronger and stronger. The barrage of stuff in the news, Facebook itself, things get shoved around in there. It just keeps on building up and building up. And I'm going to come back to the point about Stalin and Hitler. I think we've got to emphasise that all forms of nationalism are anti-working class. Okay. I've got a friend I've been arguing with recently because he's trying to tell me that Stalin was much better than Hitler because Russia, Stalin didn't kill people on the basis of race.
He killed Poles on the basis of race.
How can you say these things? He killed millions of people. The bigger cause is totally irrelevant. So, yes, certainly.
Yesterday was the anniversary of the deportation of the Tartars from Crimea, by the way.
Right, okay. Yeah. So there's a wonderful history, if you wish to want to go through Stalin, and how many people died under Stalin's regime. It's incredible. Certainly, if I were a Jew, whether a worker or an ex-boss, in Auschwitz, I'd be mighty relieved to be released. Just as if I was a Russian worker or an ex-Russian Bolshevik in one of Stalin's camps. It's totally equal. But it's not politics, it's not struggle. You can't look as a fight between two imperialist powers and think of it as a boxing match, you know, where you've got to play fair and it doesn't matter who you support. You know, I didn't care whether it's Pacquiao or Mayweather win. I don't particularly identify with either of their colours or either of whatever, or a white person or a black person. It doesn't really matter. You can let them win. You can have, if you've got to support a nice fair game like that and think, well, which one's slightly better, or I like it, I'll support that. You can't do that with imperialist powers. And so just because Hitler had concentration camps that people died in, yes, we'll condemn him for it, but you can't say that the person that opened that camp, that's not part of the war. That's somehow separate to that imperialist war and separate to the class war. The class war still goes on. At that point in time, they were dominant. That's the whole point. The working class was weak and wasn't a presence in those things. It was an imperialist war. And I see nothing wrong. In fact, I see everything right in taking the view that all nationalism is dead and a plague on both their houses. And I wish to apply that all of the time. I do not wish to make exceptions, whether it's in Rahava, Vanuatu, 2, Russia, of all places, needs, you know, who needs national liberation in Russia? So I don't. A plague on both their houses. I think that's the only way that you can look at nationalism nowadays. It's dead.
Just to give a little bit of comfort to the comrade here, perhaps, I don't know. What I think is important, though, is to understand situations where people are actually physically under threat, war situations. People are often forced back onto their own resources. And human beings, at the end of the day, are human beings. And I have a great faith in human beings at the end of the day. But you can't be a communist and not have faith that somewhere along the line, you are a human abilities, our human capacity to cooperate, look after each other, and look after our own interests cannot surface. Now, the weird thing is, of course, in the context of war situations, when everything else is sort of falling about apart around you, and you've got to look after yourself, people will come together and they will look after each other. And they will often act in a very equal way in the sense that if the only food that's available is there, or if your neighbour is his house has been bombed or whatever, then you take them into your house, or you work together to try and share out what food you've got. This is just what people do in all situations, frankly, under dire threat. And I would say the best of what's happened, if you like, in Rojava is just that. But the thing is that people are trying to overlay on top of those kind of basic human characteristics that we all value, that people do from time to time. A new ideology, if you like. They want to rope that, they want to use that as a basis for support for something else, which is to build a new state, basically, a new nation state. And I would say in the context of Java in particular, the difference is that its main thrust has come from a straightforward ethnically based Kurdish nationalism. But in the context of the actual reality of that area and the geography of that area and who lives there, you couldn't possibly even maintain that existence without some kind of ideology that was more democratic, that was more multi-ethnic. In other words, that is the only way that they could pull it together and create some kind of state. But all you, the best of what you're talking about there is them trying to create a more democratic version of what might otherwise exist, where there would be some measure for people to practice this religion rather than that religion, or whatever else. That is at its best. And you know, it's really important to understand that. And, you know, even that is dependent on coming to terms with the other powers in the region. There's no basis on which that could exist without it coming to terms with whatever is the sustained power in the region. So it's got to come to terms essentially with Turkey, and of course that's what Öcalan and PKK have come to realise. I mean, that's what it was all about at the end of the day, was they couldn't win a war with the Turkish state, so it comes to terms with the Turkish state. So autonomy for an element of self-rule, in which obviously the PKK would be the dominant force, is what they're aiming for. In the context of the war in Syria, it is different because there are different state powers at play. There are different politics at play at this moment. And until that is resolved, until that settles into some form, you know, the exact form of it will be different. But there's no power, there's no basis. How can I put it? There's no basis in the economy or the powers of the region for anything to sustain itself on three cantons in the north of Syria as the bastion of some kind of revolution that's going to set the world afire. It's just unrealistic, implausible, and it can't happen. So we shouldn't, you know, misinterpret good human features of people trying to survive under threat of annihilation, or just surviving when they might starve, and working together to create that as being a basis for some new radical movement or some new kind of ideology or some new kind of way forward for revolutionising the world or defeating capitalism. It's not going to defeat capitalism. You know, at its best, it would be an enclave that's a bit more democratic, maybe a bit more secular, maybe, or whatever. You know, that were at its best, you know.
I mean, just to kind of add on to what Mike just said, actually, I mean, one of the interesting things at the very beginning of the Syrian conflict is the fact that one area that was never touched by Assad, and this is quite a bit of a history between Assad and the, sister organisation that PKK called? What's the name? Muslims?
PYD.
Hey?
PYD.
Yeah. It's the fact that they were never attacked by Assad at all. They were completely left alone, partially because there's quite a history of them actually having been supported, and Assad being quite sympathetic of having a small autonomous area within the north, because of the issues between Syria and Turkey. It'd be one of those.
I know plenty of Syrian refugees in Huddersfield who are Kurdish, who came precisely because of Assad.
Oh, yeah.
I think what happened was in 2012 was Assad's government began to collapse in parts of Syria. They obviously had their hands full with Free Syrian Army, and in effect they just left Kurds to it. At a time when the Kurds were expecting hostilities from Assad, they suddenly realised it weren't happening. They were getting hostilities from Al-Nusra Front, etc., etc., precisely because the Kurds tend to be more secular and aspire to a more secular society than certainly jihadists, for want of a better phrase, would allow. But again, and I'm not saying what's happening with Java is perfect, far from it, but where in the Middle East is there a movement where feminism is the kernel of that movement, or environmentalism? Where is there in the world armed forces where the ranks elect the leaders by the people's patrol, the people's protection units. It's something that may be tinged by nationalism, you could say, and may have its roots in nationalism, but everything evolves in one direction or another, and it would appear that what's happening in Mujahideen is a movement that's evolving in something, especially considering the hideous circumstances in the Middle East, as something worth giving some support to. And I did wish to comment on what the Sister for Workers' Power, for Workers' Liberty said, because I think she was saying, on the basis of a plague to both your houses when it comes to nationalism, where do we stand on the Palestinian question? Do we support the Palestinian struggle against Israel? Or do we stand aside from it? Because it's obviously interwoven with nationalism. It's also interwoven with class politics and religious things. But where do we stand on that struggle if we say black and white, for want of a better phrase, a plague on both your houses?
I think you have to look at the power relations, which is the most powerful, and support the least powerful. I think that's kind of where you've got to come from.
I do what you're saying, but at the same time, I think it's a bit, it's a very easy thing for us to say, like, and I think sometimes people don't realise how important in a practical sense as well. For so look at South Africa apartheid, and like South African lawyers know that it's the end of apartheid. Well, hopefully, a lot of them do know that that's not the end of the struggle. That's not the end of it. But they're still glad that it's over. They're still glad that at least now that they're not told that they should be fenced in some little enclave with, where there's no family until starved to death, while that obviously is the end of it, there's still capitalism in South Africa, obviously. The deracialized aspect of it sort of can mean something to some people, and also there is a practical sense to this, in Peru or any Latin American society, if Spanish is the official language, if you don't speak Spanish, you can't get a job, basically. Whereas, and if you're brought up speaking Quechua or any Native American language, Spanish is your second language, okay, no job prospects for you. So suppose you want to campaign to have a Native American language like Quechua installed as one of the national languages, so it's slightly easier for you to get a job and work. And is that a nationalist struggle?
There's a continuous twisting of the argument here going on. Nobody is against fighting against oppression or people fighting against oppression. But what we are trying to get you to see is that A, in Rojava, the scenery you describe isn't the scene that really exists on the ground, and that some of the things that you're talking about, you're sort of gliding over the real problems. We've written more articles on South Africa than years you've been alive, right? Every time we produced a Worker's Voice back in the 70s and 80s, we wrote about South Africa because we have South African comrades. And we said that if apartheid is not the end of the struggle, the ending of apartheid, from the very beginning, we said, is only changing the colour of the bourgeoisie. I don't think we've been proved wrong. When Cyril Ramaphosa is the head of one of the mining companies in South Africa, he was the head of the South African COSAF, the Confederation of South African Trade Unions. It was quite clear from the beginning that it was going to end in tears unless there was an autonomous class movement. But inside apartheid, where there was, inside the anti-apartheid movement, where there was germs of proletarian resistance, they were hoovered up by the South African Communist Party and those who wanted.
May I?
Well, yeah, he's worked in South Africa. Hoovered these up, and channel them into the anti-apartheid. Oh, no, class struggle. Anti-apartheid struggle. And in so doing, you said they're better off than they were. Well,
I'm not saying material. That's a very debatable question. I'm not saying material.
I don't have the Vantage Star. I'm going to carry a card everywhere you go. Somebody else speaks about this, put down the first, you can speak afterwards.
Just to give you a bit of a first-hand idea. I lived in a particular place in the early 80s, for example. It's the latter height of apartheid. Literally within South African borders, if you were white and you spoke to somebody who was black, they would get beaten by, you know, a local copper or anybody running around with a gun or whatever. I was stopped from, sort of just managing a couple of sentences of conversation with a guy giving me coffee in a hotel. Of course, he was black and I was white. I was told, quite simply, you do not do this or he will be sacked, and all of his family who work here as well, and so on and so forth. I ended up having to deal with a whole variety of a local black royal family and elements of the local black bourgeoisie who were wildly as corrupt as anybody. I lived in Maseru, Lesotho, so while I was there, particular sets of South African refugees, looking to go on to the camps, came across and spoke to me, and I know full well, because they used certain phrases along the way, I know full well that the ANC shot them precisely for speaking up, using words, such as workers' councils, so on and so forth, and a whole set of things, so on and so forth. The local black liberationists, be they directly ANC or associated organisations, I know full well that huge amounts of the people in the high reaches, are precisely the people who are earning now a massive book off poor sods who are digging out mines, such as the ones that we put out a small pamphlet on some time ago. The bourgeoisie is the bourgeoisie is the bourgeoisie. And it doesn't matter how they rise into that particular position, be it courtesy purely of such, or be it on the back of, a union vote, if you see what I mean, and so on and so forth. Sorry, man.
I mean, just a quick point on the South African thing. I mean, it's worthwhile listening. I mean, that guy came so to the tour from South Africa, from Shepherd as well, Dwellers Movement, a few years ago. It was very interesting. One of the things that he said, was it better? They questioned whether it was better. They were being gunned down from helicopters by the ANC police. Mm-hmm. They're having their huts smashed up and destroyed. In the last elections, they refused to vote for anybody on the basis that the ANC were destroying their own communities and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But that's just a thought of that.
Well, the Economic Freedom Fighters are sort of interesting organisation. I mean, they broke from the ANC a long while ago, under their comrade leader, Malina. And they attacked Zuma in Parliament for his corruption. In fact, he's building expenses on his three new houses, his new palaces. So they got kicked out of Parliament.
But whether my leader himself is any better, really, I don't know. But I think the thing is to say, yes, apartheid was a particular evil that's got shut up, but you've still got a capitalist system, and you've still got, it's a very volatile country, you know, the violence is endemic under the surface. But I do feel that a lot of South African people I met, anyway, you know, black South African people I met, they have a self-confidence in, you know, they're still quite bolshy. They're still, I mean, the motorway going in from Gauteng to Johannesburg, they've got, it's a toll motorway, and they all refuse to pay it, you know. So there's still a sort of strong spirit of contrariness in the South African population. But again, you know, it's a vicious capitalist society, but I still think it's better than the apartheid one.
Can I say something a bit more abstract and rather less concrete about actual situations in Burundi? I know we had a conversation before where I said that I think Machiavelli was a better analysis of the way power operates and history changes. So I see nationalism as an ideology that's created, and I also see things like jihadism as an ideology that's been created. I see Protestantism as an ideology that's been created. These are all created ideologies which are then fed into a divide and rule. It's like a tool for dividing and ruling. So what I see is the rise of the Dutch state, the rise of Protestantism was a way of challenging the power of the Catholics. So it's kind of an abstract idea where ideologies are actually created. So jihadism was created in American universities. The school books were printed in America. They were sent out to Pakistan, where they were going to kids, you know, kids with guns, go and kill communists, they're atheists. Funded by Saudi, yeah. And America, CIA, Saudi Arabia. So I just wanted to bring that kind of more abstract power, the way that power changes on the planet, and how that kind of Machiavellian idea of divide and conquer, where you create an ideology to create the divisions. The divisions are already there, but you just turn up like Shia Sunni in Iraq. You know, you create that conflict.
I just ask why then you don't apply that to, you said something before about you take the side of the most oppressed or the weakest, but you, that's in contradiction to what you've just said.
It's not a contradiction to me as a human being. Right? So as a human being, I take the side of the oppressed. As a human being. While trying to
but then you're understanding that nationalism is used as a construct. You support nationalism.
No, I don't support nationalism.
You should do. You say you support the weakest nationalism.
No, I say the most oppressed. So within the Palestinian community, there are people who are oppressing the weakest. So I do not support the people within the Palestinian community who are oppressing the weakest, who are supporting the oppressors.
They're oppressors working class. You've got ruling class.
There's only one class, as far as I'm concerned, that's the ruling class. All the rest is constructive.
It's the ruling class.
There is only one self-identified class, and that's the ruling class. They're the only ones that go around in chauffeur-driven things. They used to wear funny hats. There's only one class.
The working class?
No, the ruling class. I know it's a controversial thing to say, but it's just the way I see it.
There are workers.
What I'm saying is the ideology of being... I don't see myself as a worker. I see myself as a human being.
Maybe a self-identified person. They realise they're a class.
Yes, self-identified. And everything they do is to say we are the ruling class.
But the point I want to make is that the only property we have is program. our programme and the ideas that sustain it.
Yeah.
Now, our ideas about what the programme is might be different,
yeah.
but that's all we've got.
Yeah.
So when you say you support some movement in another part of the world, what does that mean? You don't send them guns, you don't send them money.
Well,
you're down for cheering from afar.
Well,
and when you do that,
well, there
you stride your own
program. In, say, example with the Palestinians, there are groups within Sheffield that you can support.
Yeah, I know.
So that's what I would do in that situation, like support if there's something going on locally, and we support people.
Well, I'm well aware of the Palestine Solidarity Campaign. I know some of the people involved. I've got respect for them, but I can't bring myself to support Palestinian nationalism.
No, I can't.
Because that is a false religion.
Yeah, yeah, it's a construct.
By all means, if there are groups who are having a raw deal at the hands of the Palestine nationalists, speak up for them, but that's as much as you
can. Yeah, there are working class people in Israel being oppressed. So you support them? Yeah. Clearly.
I think the key is to work supporting workers in both Palestine and Israel. I mean, you only have to look recently at the conflicts. Look, there's quite a long history of racism, for example, against Ethiopian Jews in Israel as well. I mean, so we're not suggesting just ignore them, even go away. What we're saying is it has to be a class fighting for its own interests as a class. The working class fighting for its own interests in the class, not fighting for a two-state solution, a one-state solution. It has to be the class fighting for its own solution, which is to get rid of all states. I wanted to come back to a point you mentioned about that feminist thing in PKK and feminism and what's good. And then I'm just going to looking at what a friend in Turkey wrote this. And also, funny to accuse actually Kurdish stuff that they've been talking about in the PKK. I mean, there's a long history of sexual abuse in the PKK, which is quite well documented. You can go on various forums like the comment section, and you'll find long quotes from PKK leader. This whole idea that they've got the one women's section. Isn't it cool? And all the left are like, oh wow, yeah, look, nice. But so have ISIS got their own women's arm sections as well. Are they just as feminist as what the PKK is because they've got women using women to fight the wars? They've also got kids fighting for it on both sides. So it's all a bit of a mess, really, on both sides of it. And to me, the thing about people talking about, oh yeah, it's a bit more democratic, it's a radical form of social democracy. But that's all it really is. And as kind of Mike was saying, I don't know, take the Blitz in England during the Second World War. Working class people facing bombs dropping down on them, they club together, they support each other. It's no different in that sense what's going off in West Kurdistan at the moment. Within a context of a massive imperialist war between different factions.
You're right about ISIS having women-only battalions, as indeed does the Iranian army, but I don't think them battalions will have any agreement to deal with domestic violence in communities like the People's Patrol groups, People's Protection units. But I wanted to pick up on something else, which is, I think the brother mentioned, the contradictions. But that's the problem. Well, it's not a problem. It's the reality of the world is that it's contradictory. And it's becoming more contradictory and more complex as capitalism collapses in and of itself. But the question of the Palestinian, you can have someone who's a Palestinian and is oppressed because they're a Palestinian. And he's also a bricklayer, so he's a worker who's oppressed because he's a worker.
Exploited because he's a worker.
And is oppressed by the Israeli state because he's Palestinian, and he could be oppressed by his employer who's also a Palestinian and an Arab. And then he goes home, and it's quite within the realms of possibility that he there oppresses his wife. It's what the brother said about it's navigating through the power structures and how we deal with the power structures to ultimately build or rebuild a socialist or anarcho-socialist movement because I think one of the concerns I have is if you're trying to build socialism within Palestinian community or within Kurdish community, you'd have to be understanding about this issue of nationalism, because it has given them sustenance in their struggle against a higher power, whether it be Turkish state or Israeli state, etc. So it's just, what I'm saying is, it's the sort of things that we need to be navigating through.
Probably,
the basic tenet of our movement is we do not support the bourgeoisie. That's the basic tenet of our movement. Yeah. You know? So we are not oblivious, we're not blind to imperialist aggression. We condemn imperialist aggression. We condemn Israel's incursion into Palestine. Similarly, we don't side with the British Conservatives or the British Labour Party to keep Scotland within the Union. However, that's as far as we go. We do not give any support to any bourgeois faction of any kind. And that not only applies to the national question, it applies to any other situation. For example, the Spanish Civil War. We think that the major error was the revolution was abandoned in favour of an alliance with the bourgeoisie to fight fascism. Yes? So...
Also, they neglected the Moroccan national. If they joined in with the Moroccans,
can you go through chair? There's a few people want to speak.
So, however much we deplore imperialism, the solution, from our point of view, is never supporting any bourgeois force to oppose that imperialism. The solution, the active part of our the active solution we propose is simply socialism. That's our only solution today.
Mike?
Yeah, I just thought a brief... bring it back to a point that Jock made right at the beginning about the fact that the real... the working class really is an international class in reality, in material reality, which has to go wherever the work is. And, I mean, it's... There is a basis in that, in a material sense, for unity to be developed and built, to develop an independent movement, if you like. Sometimes irrespective of the ideology, it depends what people do is often as important or more important than what they've sometimes got in their heads, in a sense. But there's some good examples of that. I mean, even in the context of Kurdish workers, and I mean here Kurdish workers, because obviously... There's a lot more could be said about the class structure of different parts of what is known as different parts of Kurdistan spread across Turkey right through to Iran. Because there are elements of tribal society and tribalism there. And I mean, there is an argument to say that to the extent we've seen some new developments in the context of the approach to women's position and so on within that context, that is. Essentially, it is part of a modernising movement of the PKK, not anti-capitalist, but to a modernising capitalist approach. In other words, they're not even, parts of those areas are not even fully integrated in a capitalist sense, in a modern capitalist sense. And part of what they're doing, if anything, at its best, could be seen as a part of a modernising regime to get away from the worst aspects of the remnants of an old-fashioned capitalist or pre-capitalist tribal, even, forms of operation in those parts of the world. But where are the rest of these, the Kurdish people, the Kurdish workers? Well, they're in Turkey, they're in this country, they're all over the place. They are part of the international working class, and they have got huge potential for helping develop a genuine, independent, working class movement. And that some efforts have been made in that direction. Some efforts have been made during the context of some of the big disputes and strikes that have taken place in Turkey itself. Now, as communists, I think, you know, independent and class means, in the process of building that class movement, opposing any oppression based on language or people's origins or ethnic origins. Obviously, we're opposing that. We oppose it by trying to develop the class unity, the class independence. And you can only do that by a complete and utter thoroughgoing opposition to any of the politics of the groups involved that come along and say, well, the real solution here is to go and form a new nation or an autonomous region in Turkey or a new nation in Syria or whatever else. And that is where the politics of it, the PKK and all the rest of it, that is where they're situated. And that is their role in that. And that is, to that extent, you know, we've got to oppose them. But it just struck me that, you know, the more I thought about it, the more I thought, well, you know, and it, you can apply this in Palestine as well, by the way, because the Palestinian working class, there isn't a Palestinian one Palestinian working class, but Palestinians who form, they form part of an international working class as well. Again, where the hell are they? Well, some of them are in Israel. Some of them are in, right across the Middle East, probably Saudi Arabia and everywhere else. The important point is to build on that. Build on that dysphoria, if you like, to cut across it and to try and break across those barriers. And they face, you know, those workers face many of the same problems. I mean, the Arab states have used that dysphoria in exactly the same way that they are discriminated against because they're Palestinian workers, or used as cheap labour because they're Palestinian workers in parts of Israel, or have been, a lot of them being expelled now. But so I think it really brings it home when you look at the reality of how the international working class lives and operates in the world today. And it's that is right. And in the context of what happened in Rojava, I mean, communists were certainly not arguing to close the borders. You know, we weren't arguing to sort of fight the imperialist war or whatever, you know, but we were certainly were not. We want to open all those borders. You know, we want to get rid of those fucking borders. No matter whether they're between Turkey and Syria or, you know, bloody Saudi Arabia. Or, you know what I mean? So there is a real basis for the communist approach. Well, not communist, whether it's anarchist communist, left communist or any other communist approach to developing independent working class. A lot of those struggles, there will be people in them with nationalist ideology. That's not the point. But we have to promote the class aspect and oppose the nationalist aspect and build practical struggles. And we can argue about what they are in such different contexts that cut across the nationalities and build on the basis of class.
Bill?
Okay, yeah. I've
put
a great deal of sympathy with the idea that, you know, this world is very complex and it's hard to understand and you have to get to grips with it all. There's certainly a hell of a lot going on and all sorts of people in very complex situations and very horrible horrible situations that are very hard to cope with and survive in. I do sympathise that. But I think I want to go back to where Jock started with just the history bit. The nation state and nationalism are a product of capitalism. They are the framework from which capitalism operates. They didn't exist before, and according to our analysis, they won't exist afterwards. They are a product of the capitalist system. So I think it's totally contradictory to talk about building socialism by having sympathy to people's nationalist struggles and nationalist ideologies, which is what you were saying, I think, about Palestinians and so forth. You just can't do that. Yes, we've got to focus on what Mike's saying about the independent struggles of the working class. If you, whether it's in Palestine or wherever else, if you're building a movement that's based on our common oppression by Israel or America or Russia or whatever else, you're going to build a movement that ends up as a nationalist bourgeoisie. Full stop. That is the reality of where things have been happening for the past century. That is the reality of what's going to come out of that. So, so yes, the world is complex, but you've got to cut through some of that and say, what are the key ideas in here? We can support working class in Israel. We will support the working class in Palestine. There is no question of that. That's where we are. But supporting the Palestinian ruling class, because they're oppressed by Israelis and Russians and Americans and Brits and so forth, so what? You know, Sodom. They will become, you give them that support, you end it. Encourage them by providing that support, they will become a proper Palestinian bourgeoisie. Independent, whatever, oppressed, whatever. But they will still be the bourgeoisie. They will still be opposed to the Palestinian working class. So we're not going to support any of that. As I said, I was going back, I started off with this bit about historical things, supporting these sort of historical struggles. We'd love to see that sort of history. Whether it's Mugabe in Rhodesia and that support that we ought to have given him because he was, you know, a nice guy, really, and nationalist. You know, okay, he was a bit nationalist, but he was a nice guy because he was approached.
You still love him.
Yes, absolutely, all did. Or whether it's a trade union leader in Poland who took the same function, took working class struggles and then became part of the bourgeoisie, part of the bourgeoisie in that country. We're not going to support those people. The only way is to keep ourselves focused on the class struggle and to discuss and identify what is the bourgeois politics that is going to lead that class struggle astray, or what is the bourgeois, or what is the proletarian politics that are going to take the working class forward. And take the working class forward to a non-nationalist socialism, a socialism which doesn't have nation states at all. As soon as you keep the nation states, it's not going to be socialism.
To sum up, just on the nationalist question, as a big communist. All about it's got stuff on the Gaza by the Anarchist Federation, stuff from CDBO on the clearly situation of national liberation, and also from the Anarcho-Syndicalist Union in Russia, stuff on the situation in Ukraine. I'm really interested in it, and I'll let Jock sum up.
You can't say it's advertising because you're not charging.
Yeah, it's free, by the way. Yeah. So you can take one.
Well, you couldn't charge for a newspaper called the Free Communist.
Yeah. It's been a very wide-ranging discussion, perhaps wider-ranging than I was anticipating at the beginning, but I think it's been very useful that it covers so many things. I think we need to differentiate one or two things. First of all, we've made clear that, and Phil's just said, repeated it, that the optimal form for the bourgeoisie to operate within is within the framework of a nation state, where property is defined, the laws are defined, and for the bourgeoisie it works well. The proletariat, though, has never been the happy inhabitants of the same nation state. Where the workers cease to be, we've moved away and become a class of migrants, suffering all the oppressions that capitalism can give. But that oppression isn't what defines us as a class. What defines us universally as a class is our exploitation. That is our relationship to the capitalist system wherever we are to be found all over the world. Naturally, we are against all oppression. But oppression is a specific action or series of specific actions against which you take whatever measure you can. If you can take any collective action, you may be able to fight that oppression. we're not against. In fact, we, as communists, say you have to be always in the battle of the fight against oppression. But what we're not in the business of doing is then saying, endorsing the solution to your oppression is that you have your own nation state. The era in which an independent nation state could be established ended over 100 years ago. The First World War demonstrated quite clearly that we've entered into a completely new historical period in which imperialist relations, and this goes, it covers every single state in the world, imperialist relations define all the relationships between the states. So even a wondrous Kurdish Democratic Republic in either Western Kurdistan or in Erbil and beyond, or in, I mean, there is actually a Kurdish autonomous region in Iran where the Iranian, run by a bunch of Stalinists called Komala, that still exists. I mean, there's at least three Kurdistans. Why do they exist like this? Because they are the cat's paws of the imperialist powers who play one off against another and play one clan like the Talibanis off against the Barzanis all the way across the board. And it's the same with every relationship, every state we can see, that their existence, their independent existence, depends precisely on the balance of imperialist forces in each area. And this is the tragedy of where we are, which is why we can say to oppression there is no solution. To fight oppression is not to pose the question of a national solution, but to say, what is it that identifies us all as the same? It's our relationship to the means of production throughout the world as an exploited class. And only when the exploiters lead the oppressed in a battle for control of the entire global system will we be in a position to get rid of all the oppressions that exist. That's a long way off. But it stays a further way off if people don't keep fighting for class coherence, class positions, and for the message that we've been trying to give today. I've lost count of meetings of leftists where we've gone and said, if you really are for socialism, stand up for class positions and for socialism. Because if everybody who claimed to be socialist actually did it, we would be in a position to transform the world.
Thank you. I
end the meeting. You may leave the room.
Yeah. I don't want to go to the loo. I'm trying to get the chairman's attention.
You've got some hopes. He's reading his own writings.
No, he's reading his own paper now. I just want to advertise next meeting, Midland Discussion Forum in Birmingham on the 20th of June. I think we're going to follow on from this and talk about British nationalism and Britain and the UK situation. Yeah, I think that's what
we're doing. And the election.
But this is the 20th of June in Birmingham on 2 o'clock in the Anchor Pub, which is one of the best real ale pubs around. Because I've got to sell the beer as well, because then you get free room if I'm selling my beer. So come along and try the real ale and have an interesting discussion as well, please, if you can get down. But links on
Free Communist.org.
Don't know us.
I'm back on my website.